Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is so beautiful to see you.
I want you to want me.
Hey out there, live music lovers. Welcome to the 7th edition of First Concert Memories, the monthly sidecast from your friends at the Ugly American Werewolf in London rock podcast, where we have on a guest to talk about the first time they saw a particular band live and how it may have changed their lives. And I know we all have them, whether it was the first one you were dragged to by your older brother, or the first time you saved your own money to go to a show, or maybe the first time you camped out for tickets to make sure you got those good seats. It's what First Concert Memories are all about. Not only telling a story of one night for one person about one particular band, but about the whole experience of gearing up and going to see live music. And those shared experiences are what we're trying to bring out here on First Concert Memories. We really appreciate you listening to the 6th episode with our buddy Marcus in the Darkest Goldman from WMMR in Philadelphia, talking about seeing U2 live at Red Rocks. Yes, that U2 live at Red Rocks show. The famous Sunday Bloody Sunday video was filmed. Great story, great fun with Marcus. And this week, we had a lot of fun with another guest who we'd not spoken with before. Stephanie Myers, who's our Pantheon sister from her fun show, Stephanie and Stephanie Talk Tunes. And now also the Song Facts podcast agreed to come on to talk to us about the first time she saw Meatloaf. Now, I'm not going to lie to you, neither Jackson and I are huge Meatloaf fans. It's very theatrical. He's got a couple of classic 70s songs in his catalog. But I can't say that beyond the Behind the Music episode they showed on VH1 in the late 90s, early 2000s, I really knew a whole lot about Meatloaf and his music. And that's why we're so psyched to get Stephanie on, because she is a huge Meatloaf fan. As you'll hear, she's seen him over 10 times over the course of her life. And on this show, she's talking about the first time she ever saw him in Houston when she was about 13 years old and had to work her parents into making a deal that if she could pay for it, then her father would take her. And it's a fun conversation. Stephanie's great. She's really cool. She's a lot of fun to talk to. We had a lot of good laughs on this episode. So not only do we do the typical 20 questions that we always give to all of our guests on First Concert Memories, but thanks to her fun personality, we got to go off in a few different directions that made it fun for all of us. So we're going to get into that shortly. But first, we do have just a little bit of business to take care of. We are very proud to be sponsored by RareVinyl.com, one of the finest LP procurers, catalogers, and shippers in the world. Okay, they've been doing it for 40 years. They have 250,000 items in stock. From the rarest first editions to incredibly hard to find foreign editions, LPs, CDs, tour programs, posters, you name it, they've got them in stock. I bet they've even got a few Meatloaf items in stock somewhere. But whatever you're into, go to RareVinyl.com, use the code UGLY, and save yourself 10%. That's 10% off one order, whether it's 2 pounds or 200 pounds, right? So don't just go get that one single that you could get at Amazon. Go find something rare. Go find that picture disc you always wanted. Go find something from Japan that you can't easily find anywhere, and use the code UGLY and save 10% on your whole order. All right, this is a fun one. We were so glad to have the pleasure of welcoming Stephanie Myers to our show to talk about her seeing Meatloaf for the first time. Well, we are excited to welcome Stephanie Myers to the program of the Stephanie and Stephanie Talk Tunes podcast, and most recently of the Song Facts podcast. Stephanie, thank you for joining us here on The Wolf.
Thank you both. I'm so excited to be here.
Actually, I got to take that back. It's okay. First Concert Memories. I mean, we're still happy to have you. I'm not taking that back. It's just, you know, I forgot for a second we were on our sidecast here, First Concert Memories.
Okay.
But this is fun. I mean, this is, we've got a lot of great feedback on this as far as, because we can go in so many different directions with it. Yes, I gave you like the sixth grade civics, you know, who, what, where, why questions, you know, of the night. But the more interesting stuff is down at the bottom, and that's where all of our side questions come from. And it's just great to be able to hear people's experience on what was a special night for them, right? And it involved rock and roll music.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And yeah, I remember that night really clearly. It was a really special night for me.
All right. So before we get into the who, what, when, where, why, how did you get into Meatloaf? Did you love him when you were little? Then he came back? Or was it this big comeback on So Much News? You can say, well, I got to see what this is all about.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'd become a really big Meatloaf fan at age 12. And I was very into the Bat Out of Hell 2 album, which at that time was huge. And to give context, which is around the time I saw this concert, I'd Do Anything for Love hit number one all over the world.
Right.
Meatloaf won a Grammy for that performance earlier that year, which I always like to remind people of, because that was a big deal for him.
Right.
So yeah, and I've been, that started my fandom. Been a really big fan. I don't know if you guys can probably see it on here, but I'm actually wearing this necklace is part of one of his guitar strings. I wear it.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So we're in a whole different, we're in a whole different world here now. This is not, like, hey, I went to the show. You are a huge fan.
I'm a really big fan.
Okay.
And it's spanned out my life. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. And I know that you did an episode on Stephanie and Stephanie about Mr. Loaf and your love.
I did.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how did you two meet, by the way, since I don't know that story?
Yeah. Stephanie Pena and I met in college, and we quickly bonded over our tastes in music, over what we loved to do, which was go see concerts. And really, when we decided to start the show, we said, you know, we have so many stories and we're telling people them, you know, just all the time, but I think this would be a really good podcast. And we just try to connect the memories to the music, because to me, that's a really special thing to share. But as a listener, I love hearing people's memories.
Stories,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a really big thing for me. And music's, you know, such a part of people's lives, you know.
Boy, that sounds familiar to me, Jackson. How about you?
Which is why I'm so happy to be here with you guys.
Yes. Well, a couple of college roommates here who bonded over music and, yes, went to some of our first big concerts together. So that's cool. But we wanted to have you on because we're not huge Meatloaf fans. Not like we don't like him. It's just like, you know, to me, he's only really done a couple of albums and it wasn't really my thing. God bless him. Think he's quite a character. Loved him in Fight Club, you know.
Yeah.
How about you, Jackson? I mean, did you ever meet Meatloaf?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, briefly. It was very odd. I had to have been probably in middle school at that point in time. So before this record ever came out. But I mean, I knew who he was, and I knew he lived in the town that I lived in. And I showed up at the Muni golf course, and there's a dude standing in the corner who's probably, you know, I don't know how old he was at that point in time, in the kind of the late mid to late 80s, standing there in golf gear and a ponytail and just thinking to myself, you know, he had sunglasses on and everything. And I'm like, now, wait a minute. I knew he lived in the town. I'm like, that's gotta be him. Who else would that be?
Right.
So I just, you know, I just went over to him. I'm like, oh, hey, Meatloaf. And he's like, oh yeah. And he was trying to play it, you know, down. Like, I'm not, you know, big star here. Just looking to play golf. So yeah, real quick. But I mean, in the 2 seconds I met him, super nice guy. And it wasn't like, hey, kid, get away from me. Don't talk to me. But it was kind of cool because he was just trying to be a regular townie, trying to play some golf that day.
But that didn't inspire you?
Okay.
to go out and listen to his music more and then teach me about it once we got to college together?
Here was my thing about Meatloaf and Bat Out of Hell. To me, it was too over the top for me. That was, not that there was anything wrong with it. It was just
theatrically.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody.
It's really not.
Right.
And it's, you know, we were kind of doing a little pregame this morning, just talking about a couple different things. I mean, Bat Out of Hell is, if it's not a double diamond, it's got to be pretty close to being a 20 million seller. So
yeah.
Very, very successful. Just not my cup of tea as a, you know, middle schooler / early high schooler.
Gotcha.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
So do you have like other Meatloaf friends? Is that like something you bond with? Like a lot of people, like I'm a Rush fan. If I see somebody in a Rush shirt, it's like I can go over and say hi to him and talk to him a little bit. Is it the same like if you meet a Meatloaf fan, like you're immediately like friends and like down the rabbit hole together?
Sort of, though. You know what? I don't think I've met anyone in person who is as big of a fan as me, and that's not to be self-aggrandizing. It just means I'm just like a really big fan. I saw all his movies, his TV shows too. Over the years, because I've seen him 13 times, and I would go see him with various friends. The friend that I met him on his kind of like tour bus area after a Houston show.
Wow.
And action, it was kind of a similar story where he was trying to downplay his fame a little bit. And my friend immediately, like, he thought it'd be funny to be like, oh, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. Like Wayne's World. Yeah. And Meat was like, nope, get up. No, you're not.
Cut
no,
that out.
I'm not
Cut
a star right fan. Now. I'm not. Yeah. I'm just like you. And his famously, he had said, I don't want any promotional materials to refer to me as like star, legend. Like, don't put that in interviews. Like, don't do that. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed like a family guy, right? He, you know, had a couple great girls, and you know, he said he was playing golf in your town, Jackson. He's not a crazy wild guy anymore. Maybe in his 70s, but that was the 70s, you know.
Yeah. And I didn't know his daughter personally. She was a couple years behind me, Pearl?
Yeah,
who ended up is now married to Scott Ian from Anthrax. But I was, because I talked to my brother, who's a couple years younger. He's like, yeah, no, I mean, I knew of her, and she was just a normal person. And I think she was kind of the same way. Like, yeah, you know, oh, is your dad? But, you know, never really wanted to get into it too much. Just kind of wanted to live as much of a normal life as she possibly could.
Yeah. And she's got a great band too. Yeah. She plays out here in LA a lot.
Amazing voice. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's jump in here a little bit. Let's start these very well-researched and thought-out questions that everyone loves to go over. The first five are pretty factual, simple stuff. Date, venue, city, artist, tour. Can you lay that on us?
Yeah. So it was August 3rd, 1994. Like I said, I'd become this big Meatloaf fan at age 12, and I was just 13 when this was coming to town. It was the Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion in Houston. It was for the Everything Louder Than Everything Else tour, which he was touring all around the world at that point. So, yeah.
So had he already done the Bat Out of Hell 2 tour, then this was the follow-up tour to that?
Well, the Everything Louder tour, which is a track off Bat 2, was in support of Bat 2. And that tour, I mean, he toured that for a really long time, and it was huge. And he was, selling out arenas all over the world with it. Yeah, people were rediscovering his performing, although it was interesting because even in the 80s, and even when he was kind of between albums too, they would get sold on the strength of his live shows.
Sure.
And he'd play these like small venues and blow the roof off the place. And I think finally being able to be back in arenas around that time, from what I understand, was really huge from him.
Well, no doubt. And if you don't believe what Stephanie's saying here, folks, about it going number one all over the world, I'll just run down a few of the countries where it did go to number one. That would include the United States and the UK, our biggest markets, right? Switzerland, Sweden, Norway, New Zealand, Netherlands, Lithuania, never seen their charts before, Ireland, Iceland, Germany, Denmark, Canada, Belgium, Austria, and Australia, where it was actually the number one song of the year in 1993. And the same in the UK, number one song of the year, multi-platinum around the world, just the song. And of course, the album did well too, right? So this is a really big deal for him, a huge comeback. And he toured, I mean, he toured his large rear off, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he really did. And a fun fact that I've realized has been kind of lost to the sands of time, though you guys might know it, is the Anything for Love video. It was directed by Michael Bay, and it was played all the time on VH1 and MTV. And I really think that propelled him, because it is quite a video. If you have not seen it recently, definitely go back and watch it. It's a Beauty and the Beast style.
I can't tell you that I knew Michael Bay did that, but now thinking about it, that kind of makes sense, because there were a couple of big wide Michael Bay-esque shots, and it was all over the place. It played a lot on MTV at the time, and I think it was kind of one of those things where as soon as that happened, like, the first record came back on the charts and everybody suddenly remembered, oh yeah, we really love this dude.
Totally.
Well, wasn't Bat Out of the Hell almost like Dark Side of the Moon in America? Like, it generally never left the charts for like decades at a time. Like, every week or every 2 weeks or whatever, it would sell 15,000 copies or something like that, right?
Yes. Yes, you're absolutely right. And it's in the Guinness Book of World Records for its like constant chart longevity, which again is awesome. You know, meat had it all for sure.
Yes, attested to how big he was. And yet, like we've already agreed, he's not for everybody. It's not like, I don't know, who is for everybody? The Bee Gees? At least at one point they were, right? You know?
Right.
But it's, I mean, the record sales that he has, you would think, okay, well, he's Led Zeppelin or he's, you know, he's got something special, you know, and he does. It's just not everyone's cup of tea.
Hi, this is Toby Ames, the director of the rock and roll documentary In the Court of the Crimson King, King Crimson at 50. And you are listening to the Ugly American Werewolf in London podcast.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
All right, you said it's a Cynthia Woods. Would you say that was an amphitheater or an arena?
This was definitely an amphitheater.
Okay.
And we had lawn seats. And yeah, just as Meat said in Paradise by the Dashboard Light, I remember every little thing about that night as if it happened only yesterday. So
wow.
I'm happy to tell that story if we're ready for it.
That's what we're here for. But all right, so obviously number eight is, was it your idea? Did you go with the crowd? We know you wanted to go. Who did you go there with and how did you get there?
Yeah. So the context of me being, I mean, I had just turned 13 years mm-hmm. old. So, you know, I didn't have the autonomy of a car or anything else. But being this semi-newly minted fan, I think I'd been just really obsessively listening to him for a little over a year at that point.
Okay.
And I wanted to see this show more than anything. And I really distinctly remember that the Woods Pavilion had a special deal that night where ages 12 and under could get a free ticket with the purchase of a ticket. So I remember Meat was going to be in town, and it was the night of my regular weekly piano lesson.
Okay.
And I begged my parents, specifically my dad, to take me to the show. I begged. And my parents finally said, if you pay for the piano lesson that you'll miss, and you pay for both you and your father's tickets to the show, then he'll take you and okay. you can go. And because I passed for like 12 years old at age 13, I got my ticket free, nice. Paid for my dad's ticket, and then we went.
BOGO. Beautiful. Yes. Yes, I'm 12. Yeah. Amazing. So your dad, you're 13 years old with your dad at the Meatloaf show on the lawn. I mean, I guess, do they have TV screens then for you?
Yeah, we had pretty good lawn seats, but yeah, we were back from, you know, it's the edge of all those seats, and we were back there, and we had big screens. We had pretty good view that night. Yeah, we had pretty good view.
Wait a minute. I want to back this up for a minute here. On that night, what were the odds of your father thinking this was actually going to happen? There's no way she'll pay for the thing and the piano lesson right. and everything. I don't have to go to this show. Like, was he kicking and screaming, or was he excited to go? What was this? Like, good I question. Can't believe I'm actually doing this on a Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because I remember it was like, for me, like a campaign of weeks. Mm-hmm. And I was like, guys, this show, like, I have to go to this show. This is what I have to do. And my parents were still like, yeah, I don't know about that. You know, right. I'll do anything. Mm-hmm. I'll do anything. Just like the song. And they're like, if you did this, I remember my mom also suggested be like, maybe bake your dad a cake for when he comes home from work to really sweeten this deal. So nice. I did all these things. And I was like, no. Like, whether or not you guys want to be there that night, we're going to go. And oh, I just remembered my dad's old college roommate played Bat Out of Hell on a loop over and over, that album, so continuously that my dad really was burned out.
No. Yeah, he hated it, right?
No. Yeah,
never wanted to hear that again.
Yeah, and was like, why do I have this daughter who's like obsessed with this Meatloaf show? Oh, like, God. When I was tortured in my dorm room.
You're here
with
to
this.
Torture me.
So that was a funny detail.
It sank into your dad's DNA and then he passed it to you. That's exactly what the rock and roll does, you know? I'm telling you. That's why we have to share these stories, you know, to the next generation so they can explain, Daddy, why do I love The Who when my friends don't even know who The Who are?
Exactly.
I don't know, honey. Yes, exactly. Okay, so I guess at 13 and going with your dad, you don't have much of a pregame ritual, but did you like sing in front of the mirror before you left? Did you make sure you had your exact outfit you wanted? I mean, what did you do?
You know, I remember being like, okay, I'm going to try to find, because the internet was kind of in its infancy back then. Mm. I was trying to find on, they called them bulletin boards or Usenet back then, like, oh, what are the songs based right. on his other stops, and trying to figure out, is it just going to be from the first Bat Out of Hell and then Bat Out of Hell 2 songs that he plays, which he did. He played songs from both those albums, but not from his other ones. Right. And I was trying to figure out, you know, song order, like, what's he going to do? How's he going to do it? But back then there was just less information around that. So
that's
it was
right.
kind of a little bit of a expedition to be like, what should I expect? You know,
good for you though, because you're right. I mean, there was no way to know what the set list was going to be unless you knew somebody in another town and who had already seen them or something like that. There was really no information out there like that, but that was kind of the magic of it. And now I can't help myself. Like, I always go to setlist.fm to see, okay, what is he going to play? Right. Because I want to be familiar with it. Right. I want to have some idea. I want to schedule my bathroom breaks, you know, I'm that age.
Exactly.
You know? So yeah, I got you. All right. But did anyone open for him, or was it an evening with?
Yeah. Cheap Trick opened
no way
me. Yeah, and it was they were really good. I was kind of an old soul even at that age, so I did know most of their hits, but they put on a really energetic show. And you know, I've been to a lot of shows since where people, you know, just peace out during right. the opening act or whatever, but people were very into what Cheap Trick was putting down that night, so they were picking up what they're putting down. It was really
that's
good.
Awesome. I've seen Cheap Trick as an opening act for Aerosmith, and I thought, wow, cool. They've still got it, man. I mean, they did just as well as Aerosmith did. I mean, you know, Robin doesn't do everything Steven does on the stage, but I thought sonically they were fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, they really do put on a good show, yeah.
Yeah, Rick likes to joke that we're everybody's sixth favorite band.
I like that. I like that.
But they never, I've never heard anyone see him live and say, you know what, I didn't like the Cheap Trick show. I mean, honestly, I've only heard good things about them live. All right, so we're talking about the lawn. So you're at the front of the lawn then, right? I mean, like getting close to the seated area, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How was the sound? Was this your first concert? Have you been to concerts before?
I had gone, so my very first concert I'd ever gone to was a Beach Boys show.
Okay, cool.
Reunited Beach Boys downtown. And that wasn't, we were very far away for that one. But the sound for this was surprisingly good. You wouldn't necessarily think so. But I was like, okay, yeah, Like, we got it. We're loud. We should have even worn earplugs out here on the lawn, which you didn't think you'd need.
Wow.
But it was great. Yeah, it was really good.
What was the weather like? I'm just thinking now, it's August in Houston and you're outside.
Yeah. You know, I remember it was like shockingly okay that night, or maybe my threshold for heat growing up in Houston is just really, yeah, my threshold for heat must have also been pretty high.
Okay.
But yeah, it was temperate enough that there was a lot of people out on the lawn with us that night. A lot of people opting to have their little picnics out on the lawn.
Yeah, nice. All right, well, so we mentioned the sound. Is there a band behind him doing all this? Are they piping it in? Are they playing stuff behind on the screens that are like videos and stuff, or is it just showing him play live?
Yeah, Meat was always very theatrical in his performances. So not only did he have kind of like screens and little special effects of that time, but his longtime band, the Neverland Express, was back there too, backing him that night. And those were also the days of his main vocalist for a long time, Patty Russo, who did Paradise by the Dashboard Light with him that night. Cool. And filled in as the female vocalist for Anything for Love, which she did on the live tour. You know, on the record, it's Mrs. Loud or Lorraine Crosby. But he's very much like a team player up on that stage. And he's really, I think what I always loved seeing him in shows, my favorite thing was just, he was just so theatrical, and he kind of just felt like sometimes you were watching a Broadway show.
So, because he's really giving it out there, right? He's like struggling with everything and singing loud and using his hands, using his body, singing on the ground.
Yes. Singing on the ground. Yeah. Paradise by the Dashboard Light is always like a very choreographed one too. And it's usually the studio version's an 8.5 minute song, and he usually makes it like a 20 minute performance in concert. Right. It's this very, it's like a literal, you're watching theater up there. So if you knew what to expect, you were like, oh yeah, cool. And I think people who are new to that were kind of like, what is he doing?
Well, how did you feel about that though? Well, go ahead, Jackson.
I was going to say, that was one of the things we were talking about kind of earlier, was what were the run times on these songs? Because it looks like there's only 11 songs that he played. So obviously some of these were stretched out.
Yeah. He really, really stretches these out. And yeah, Paradise would be live. I mean, all the times I saw it, it's 20 to 30 minutes.
Wow. There's
a documentary.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a documentary called In Search of Paradise that just talks about like his evolution of that song and how, because he was using, there was like a younger vocalist at one point too. And people were like, oh, like, is this copacetic? Like, what's going on? But he was really, really known for that performance. And then I think in this tour stop too, because I was looking at the Dallas set list, which is online, but that was for the next night, was Objects in the Rearview Mirror. Maybe pretty closer than they are. And that, he also doing that one live, like he would stretch that out too. And that was usually at least like a 15 minute song. And actually there's a clip this week that got unearthed that had never been before seen. It's on Instagram all over the place now. It's him and Jim Steinman playing together on that tour, doing a live version of Objects.
Oh, wow.
And it was really moving, and people were like, oh my God, these two legends, hope they're doing something in the great beyond, you know?
Okay. From Bad Out of Hell 2, what Jim Steinman considers the best song he's ever written in his entire life. And also, what happens to be the longest title of any one song ever written. Objects in the Rearview Mirror may appear closer than they are.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, now, okay, so you mentioned Jim Steinman. He did play songs from Bad Out of Hell and Bad Out of Hell 2, but then he also played a couple songs from a Jim Steinman solo album, or it was a band that he had together, right?
I don't know if it was that night, to my knowledge, unless it was, Rock and Roll Dreams is technically a cover of a Jim Steinman song off the Bad for Good album.
The one from Dallas is Out of the Frying Pan and Into the Fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's off, Jim Steinman's album too. Okay. Yeah. Technically, those are both covers.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, so, but did you have that album? Did you know about that record when you went to the show?
Yeah, I was also kind of turning into a little Steinman super fan. Back in those days, of course, you could not order that on the internet. So I had to go to like a special order at Sam Goody or something. So I had that, and I was like, oh, cool. These appeared on Bad for Good. Back before they appeared on Bad Out of Hell 2. This is so neat. And I think most Meat fans in the audience that night didn't know that those were, like, okay, technically covers, yes, but
Jim did it first, really, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, but Meat definitely made that his own, and those versions off Bat 2 are some of my favorites.
So does Meat do any of the writing, like any of the lyrics, or is it, I know Steinman does the music, but does Meat help with the lyrics at all?
You know, the way they describe their collaboration, because Jim is credited as the writer for really most of his hits, I will say. Even though I do love all of Meat's albums, but Meat and even Jim described it as they would talk about like Meat's life, mm-hmm, and that Jim would write based on that. So even though Meat didn't get a credit, like for Paradise, that's a Meat was like, oh, here's what happened to me growing up. And Jim's like, oh, I have a story about that. Mm. And Objects in the Rearview Mirror, that's a very personal story about Meat's life, including some abuse that he grew up dealing with from his father. Wow. And all that. And Jim said, yeah, let me take your stories, Meat. I'll write about them.
But so, yes, you were looking forward to theatricality, though, right? I mean, you've been studying him for a year, year and a half, something like that. You couldn't wait to see the show. Whereas, yeah, some people are like, whoa, he really runs around and does this, like, you know, he's on Broadway or something. It's like, yeah, that's what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah. I was really excited about it. I was like, yes, bring on the theater. And it's something he always continued to do, too, mm-hmm, even into his very late tours. He's like, I think in one of the recent ones, or the one of the last ones I saw, was like, it's the show starts with a fake exploding amp, like, okay, on stage, and then the show like kind of begins. But that's his whole, you know, it's like you kind of expect a little bit of shtick,
right,
to just begin out. So it's just like, all right, tour to tour, what's gonna be kind of his little shtick? So
this is theatricality.
Yeah
acting
exactly.
Brilliant. All right, let's get some more of the fun stuff here. So we can open up a little bit. Favorite moment of the show, of the evening?
Something I was thinking about was that night, someone in between songs threw up a pair of underwear on stage, and he picked them up, and he held them up, and he was just like, oh, I don't know, do these match my eyes?
Nice.
And the crowd like thought it was hilarious, but I was like, oh man, he's such like a good improviser too on stage. Like he was always just really funny. Like he was just really funny to go see, which I appreciated.
You've seen him many times. I mean, do you have any other great Meatloaf stage moments like that you can recall or that you could share with us?
Oh man, I think I appreciated, let's see, I saw a show, he called it Meatloaf on Broadway, and it was in a Broadway theater. Is just basically one of his shows in a Broadway theater. Okay. And he, I think, forgot the lyrics to Objects, which he very rarely played, but forgot those lyrics like halfway through and just kind of started making fun of himself. And like, and that was really cool. Like he could have been like, oh man, okay, like we got to start sober, whatever. He's like, no guys, like this is a 15-minute song. Like some of this, like I got to think about. And everybody, of course, was on his side after that, because how can you not be?
Yeah.
But I appreciated that he didn't take himself too seriously, which, you know, sometimes you see that kind of ego in, you know, situations like that, or even when you're that big.
Yeah, well, you don't have the freak out, walk off stage, this is over.
Yeah, no diva behavior.
Yeah,
from you.
Good. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
He's a human being like the rest of us, right? Okay.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember those words.
Exactly.
I hear that, right? Did you just say Meatloaf was a sex guy? You say that, didn't I? You said that, right? I happen to wholeheartedly agree with you, baby. I think you're up. I am a sex god, sex god, sex god, sex god. Thank you, honey, for the inspiration.
All right, so that's a great moment. What about your favorite song from this evening in particular?
You know, I loved hearing 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad. Like, that was really special for me. I, of course, like at that point had gone like into his back catalog. So even though that wasn't on the radio all the time, I knew that was something I'd really love to hear live. And I remember that night he said something like, it was thanking us all for our support over the years. And he's like, but especially these last 10 months, you know, which is the release of the album. And he's like, let's go ahead and rev up this song. And whether or not that part was maybe an act, it was still like, people were like, oh my God, he's really going to do it for us. And everybody was really excited about that. And I was totally thrilled.
Wow. So he did play it that night.
Yeah, he did play 2 out of 3.
Because he didn't play it most of that tour, from what I can see.
Yeah, I don't think it was a a standard in his set list at that point. Yeah.
Well, then that's pretty special in and of itself. I mean,
it felt really special.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Jackson, have you ever had a moment like that where, like, you know the set list, or, you know, you figure what it is, and then they pull something out, you're like, whoa, I didn't see that coming?
Yeah, and I can't, and I was, as I knew you were going to ask me that question, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but I kind of, there is nothing better than that. They're like, eh, you know, I don't know, I'm on the fence, and then they pull it out, and it's, yeah, it's great, and it's maybe something that maybe you think there is a little bit of spontaneity to this, and it's not just all canned.
Yeah.
Well, but see, nice. The thing is, I mean, in an act like Meatloaf's show, right? Like you say, he does perform and act these things out, and sometimes he's rolling on the ground and stuff like that. And you have to have some choreography with the lights and the sound for certain things. You know, it's not exactly a Kiss concert, but still, you know, these things are pretty well planned out. So for something that is so theatrical, it's hard to just stick something in there sometimes, right? But if he did, I mean, do you... this is a weird question. Do you remember the lighting or anything being different from that song, or being just like steady and plain? Because I feel like if they hadn't done it, they would just leave it. If they weren't prepared for it, they would just kind of leave it one way, or I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember it being like, it was just like suddenly kind of like low lighting and just a single spotlight. They're just like, all right. And then the band, I think, is used to his, you know, changes, and they're just like, all right, this is what the boss wants us to do.
We know
tonight.
What to do. Yeah.
Yeah. So they like knew what to rev right into. But it was like, oh man, like I've heard this so much, the studio version of it. Like my little 13-year-old mind was blown being able to hear it that night. It was so cool.
Now, is that your favorite? Was that your favorite Meatloaf track at the time?
You know, it was either that or probably at the time, Rock and Roll Dreams Come Through.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, that was really special too.
But you say at the time, what are your favorites now? Are they different?
My favorites of all time, it's such a good question. Bat Out of Hell is probably my favorite album by anyone of all time, or in the top three. I love it so much.
What else would be in the top three?
Soundtrack for My Life. Oh, ever. Oh man. Lou Reed's Transformer.
Okay.
And oh God, you know, I rank these all the time because I'm such a music nerd. I just rank them in my head. You know, Prince's Purple Rain is
that's a
like,
good one.
will never not be very special for me. Yeah.
But then if you were 13 in 1994, you were awfully young when Purple Rain came out. So you didn't get that like as it came. You kind of found it a little later in life. Yeah.
Yeah. Purple Rain came out in the 80s, but I was not like allowed to see that movie or anything
at that age. That was a good call on your parents.
You have
part.
Good parents. Yeah. Yeah.
I subsequently, you know, got to see all those in the theatrical re-releases and stuff. But, yeah, at the time, they were like, I don't know about Prince.
Yeah, there have been a lot of questions that they didn't want to answer.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, for sure.
Our parents were the same way, except it was happening like they had Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie and then Prince. He's like, you don't listen to Prince. I'm like, I don't. I like that Corvette song. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. Yeah, exactly.
The problem is a song called Darling Nikki, and we really don't want you to hear that one.
You don't want to ask you don't want questions about that one in particular.
Yeah.
A lot of facts of life with that, yeah.
Or, yeah, exactly.
Don't listen to Lady Cab Driver. Yeah. So here's one to kind of bring it all down again. Biggest disappointment of the show of the evening.
You know, I thought about it, and I don't think the show itself, like, there was any disappointments. The only thing was, I think, back then, buying meet and greet packages were a little more normalized. You don't see, I don't know, quite as much of that anymore. But I remember being like, oh man, if I had money, because I do remember that night, like they'd offered that. And I do remember being like, oh my God, if I could go backstage. And years later, I did get to meet him. But, you know, I was like, oh man, some of these fans tonight, like just get to go hang with them. And I do remember being like, if only, but honestly, I was so happy just to be at that show.
Yeah. That's great. Okay, well, so then now you got to tell us about the time you did meet him.
Yeah. So my friend Andy and I went to see him in, was it 1999? Yeah.
You'll have to tell
me. And that was in Houston. And it was after the show, and we went to go hang out by the tour bus. And we were thinking, he comes out or he doesn't, but whatever. But it was a handful of us there. And we were standing there, and somebody comes out, and they're like, he's going to come out in a few minutes, hang out here. I want you guys to like line up by the door, which okay. was not what we were expecting. At all. We didn't really expect anything. And he sat there in the driver's seat and like had us like stand right there and like sign stuff for us and wow. talked with us. And I think I said, I think I just blurted out actually. I was like, I love you, Meatloaf. And he just looks at me. He's just like, we love you too, which is the royal we, which was such a thing. That's such a Meatloaf thing. Wow. Talking in we all the time. And then yes, my friend, as I was saying, he was like, I'm not worthy. And then Meat was like, get up. No, you're worthy. We're gonna yeah. talk. We're gonna talk like humans. Mm-hmm. And then signed some stuff for him too. So wow. I was just over the moon. It was really, really nice of him. And he didn't have to do that, you know. He could have just been like, well, yeah, right. yeah, I've had a long day, guys. But it was really nice.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it was really, really neat.
I think that speaks to a to somebody who understands, like, the only reason that he's there is because of people like you buying tickets. And I think some people yeah. get caught up in the, well, you know, I gave them enough. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm out. But yeah, somebody who definitely understands it's about the fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed that every show he'd sneak in some kind of gratitude for the fans. He's like, I wouldn't be here at all. Like, if it weren't for you guys, like, thank you so much. And I thought that was really cool. And he'd always just give it his all on stage. And it was just so cool to watch. Yeah.
Well, let's face it. Meatloaf had been through some hard times. I mean, yes, Bat Out of Hell was incredible. But then the 80s came and he had some financial troubles and he had some substance troubles. And you've got a family and that's always going to give everyone troubles at some point, you know. And so, you know, and so he was doing small shows and they thought his career was over. And now he was really back on top. I mean, he's playing those big sheds, he's playing arenas, he's playing around the world.
Yeah.
So it's great to see that he wasn't just like, okay, I'm back in top, you know, I don't have to deal with these people anymore. It's like, no, this is now exactly where I get my own gratitude from, is to spend some time with people who waited backstage to see me.
Yeah, totally. And it's so interesting with Bat Out of Hell 2 and kind of his fame after that, he'd always say, yeah, guys, this isn't a comeback. Like, I've always been here. But to me, like, everything that he did in kind of that re-rise mm-hmm. back is like kind of incredible when you think about it. Because, yeah, there's a point in the 80s and he talks about it in his biography where he couldn't even, like, he couldn't go buy milk for his family at the store. Things were really bad. Ooh. He had gotten a bad end of a royalty deal. And right. The label really, really tried to screw him over. And he's like, I have to go pound the pavement. I have to do these shows. And the strength of these live shows, I think, really even propelled him, even as Bat Out of Hell was getting traction.
Yeah.
Bat Out of Hell 2 was getting traction.
It was a great Behind the Music. One of the greatest.
It was a great.
You know?
Yes. One of my faves. Yes.
I used to love Behind the Music.
So good.
But then, you know, at the end of the day, it was kind of like, eventually it's always the same things. Like, we all came from nothing and then we all made it and then we all fucked it up. And now here we are just trying to make the best of it as we're older. It's basically every single one.
It was always when they were going to break. The times were going now, but tragedy would soon strike.
Exactly.
Yes.
Next on the Def Leppard. You know,
yeah, exactly. The good times wouldn't last. Like, oh, you're waiting for, like, here it comes the crash. Boom.
Yeah.
But it was such a good format. I mean, I'd watch it on bands I disliked, you know. It's like, okay, let's see. And I was like, oh, Poison's got one. Yeah, okay, let's see how they screwed it up, you know.
All whatever. Of them. Oh my god.
Where did it go wrong for Culture Club? Let me just tune in and wait for it.
Well, it was the heroin. That's what it was. Oh, and the, you know, love affair between the band members, which one of them denies. Yeah, sure. That's part. That'll mess you up. All right.
It's true.
Hi, my name is Renee Richardson from the Metallica Report, and you're listening to The Ugly American Werewolf in London. Did I get that right?
So anyway, Oh, you're fun, Stephanie. We got to have you on some more.
This is great.
Let's see. All right. So you've seen him, what, you say 12 more times after that, or 12 times total? 13?
Yeah, 13 times total. Yeah, over the years. And he didn't always like tour really extensively. There was times where he didn't. So I do feel lucky to have seen him during those times, because I know in comparison, like I have friends who are big, like Dave Matthews heads, and mm-hmm. have literally seen him hundreds of times. But it's like that guy's touring constantly.
Right.
So like I felt like I had to see meet where I could. But I saw him. I lived in New York for a really long time. I saw him a number of times there. I saw him in Texas. And then I think the final time I saw him play was at Princeton. I think it was Princeton, New Jersey show. Yeah. And he was great. And it was such a special time. Yeah.
What year was that last show?
I will have to look that up because I am terrible with years, but I do have a little list of all the shows I've seen. So I definitely have it written down.
That's all good.
Did he ever disappoint, or did he bring it every single time you saw him?
He brought it pretty much every time. I think there's one show where I could tell he was having voice issues, and he talked about it pretty openly later, that he was kind of trotted out by his management at the time and been like, yeah, you have this cyst that you're recovering from, and we don't care. Get out there. And he talked about it later, and he's like, yeah, I was struggling through it, but they put me out there like I was a show pony. And like in that night, we were all like pulling for him, but we knew it was like, oh man, this isn't his usual thing. Like something's wrong. And we were a little concerned. But yeah, he talks about that pretty openly and said, yeah, I was told to get on the road when I was useless. And he had to, come back to health after that.
But there was never a time when you could tell he wasn't into it. He was always there to perform.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Even when it was like, when you could tell he was moving through it, like he was always there to perform. Mm-hmm. I also saw him, I flew out for his, he did a Vegas residency called Rocktails and Cocktails, I think is what it was called. And so they were encouraged to like tell the stories of the songs in, I think it was the Planet Hollywood Theater. I think that's right. Okay. And that was a real theatrical experience. And I just remember, like, not only did they have, you know, in the style of Vegas, like acrobats in the middle of the show and fire eaters, but they even had in the Anything for Love, they had a huge levitating bed, like in the music video. Like, they cut this out. Wow. So he was just always really committed to the theater, I think, of what he was doing. And that's absolutely, whether or not, you know, it's like whatever I'm doing personally, like I'm still going to give these guys a show. So I always appreciated that about him.
Where all did you see him in New York? What venues?
Oh man. The Beacon was very memorable.
That'd have been my guess. Yeah.
There was a pretty intimate show at Irving Plaza, and that was pretty great. Wow. That one sold out and it was like standing room only, but that was really cool. And then Jones Beach once, number of shows I went out to Jersey to see too, when he decided he wasn't playing the city proper. He wasn't going to play New York, but I was like, well, if he's on tour, I'm going to go, I will go find him. If he's in a 100-mile radius of me.
Good for you. Yeah. So, all right. So this first one though, of those 13, is it the best you've ever seen him? Is it up there? Where do you rank it? Ish.
It was such a special, special night for me. It was the best, if not one of the best, because it was just, you know, I'd never seen anything like it.
Right.
And he still, you know, continued to wow me over the years, but that was that was just like such a special night, even beyond the concert. It was just like, oh my God, this is happening. And to even, you know, have convinced my parents to do this, I think I was still riding that high.
Fantastic. Yeah. So yeah, after the show, you're riding high, right? You still got the buzz of the music. It was loud, so you can still kind of feel it on your body a little bit, right? Your ears are ringing and you're just psyched about what you just saw. I mean, what'd you do afterwards? I mean, obviously you didn't go out party with your friends, you know?
You know, it was a school night, and I remember like really distinctly, my dad's like, we got to beat traffic. Like we got to get out there to the parking lot right now. Like, and we drove home as quickly as we could. Houston traffic is crazy as is. And was like, all right, well, you still got to go to school the next morning. Not a lot of time to bask in it afterwards, but that was fine. That was fine. That was the version for that night. And that was cool.
Well, I think it sounds like you have great parents, right? I mean, they raised you right. They let you get into rock and roll. They tried to push back for a while at taking you. Said, okay, pay for everything. And you'll go. It's like, all right, well, she paid for it. God bless her. You know, all right, well, I'm taking you. Fine. And then when it's time to go, we're out of here.
Oh, God.
The Griswolds are leaving the parking lot, you know.
Like a bat out of hell, man.
Nice.
Did your friends at school know that how big of a fan you were?
They did, but it was funny because I remember some of them had also like seen the show, which I found out later.
Okay.
And they didn't really tell me because people were at that age, like, I think kind of embarrassed.
I was going to say, it wasn't very cool. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my favorite band is me. What?
Yeah. Yeah. Like somebody wore like a Bat Outta Hell 2 shirt the next day and everybody was like, what's that? You know, so the social pressure of junior high. I don't know if everybody thought that was cool, but like for me, it was just like, yeah, guys, like, I don't care. And everybody knows it. Like to this day, everybody's like, Stephanie's the hardcore Meatloaf fan. That's especially right. As you get older, you stop caring, you know.
That is the one nice thing. Yeah, there are definitely bands that we've talked about. It's like, I would never have admitted that back then, but now I can say proudly that, I listen to that kind of music and it makes me happy. So
yeah. And I mean, it's funny because Meatloaf himself would occasionally even reference that. He called one of his tours like the Guilty Pleasures tour. Because he's just like, yeah, whatever, guys. You know, he just leans right into it.
You know, you like it.
Yeah, he's like, whatever. So I always thought that was cool.
He knows who he is. He knows his
audience. Exactly. He knows who he is.
Absolutely. Well, obviously he's not with us anymore, but do you have any regrets about not seeing him more than you did? And like, if he was still around, would you still be going to see him?
Yeah. If he was around, I'd definitely still be going to see him for sure. And I know there's some groups and tributes keeping the legacy alive. And I think that's really cool. To me, it's like, and the day he died, you know, it was just this sad moment of like, oh man, to never be able to see him live again. Mm-hmm. Just so, yeah, I was just like, it's just a gut punch. Cause it's just such, he just made those shows feel so special. He just made him feel so special.
Yeah. What was the biggest gut punch for you ever, Jackson, when one of your heroes died?
I'm trying to think about if there was somebody that passed away that I knew that I would never see again. And I think part of it was, I'm trying to remember exactly who it was, because it was on the tip of my tongue as we were talking about this, or in the back of my mind. Who was it that was just like, oh, like, I know, like, it was sad when Charlie Watts died, because mm-hmm. I was kind of thinking to myself, I mean, we'd seen him before, but, you know, maybe one more time. And, you know, he was kind of the glue that held everything together. So
that
was sad. Yeah, it just seems like, you know, I mean, unfortunately, the older we get, the more this is going to happen.
Well, that's right. That's why we do our shows, to keep the
Correct.
Rock alive and share the memories while we have them. For me, it was definitely Neil Peart.
Yeah.
I was living in London, and it was, I don't know, it was like 11 o'clock at night. The girls were asleep and I was just reading news. And it was like, I was reading my iPad here, and it's like, you get one of those news flashes. That's like two lines, you know, it's like, drummer from Rush, Neil Peart. .. I'm like, this is going to be that he died. And then I, you know, and they're one of my favorite bands. Like, you've got three, you know, that, you know, my top three bands all time are Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, and Rush. Can't, you know, discern between one or the other who's bigger for me, but I've seen Rush 12 times. And I kind of knew that their last tour that I saw, Neil, I mean, he wanted off the road and everything. He was ready, but obviously they had kept it secret that he was sick. And now I have this child. You know, I started taking her to see Kiss because she loved Kiss and Scooby-Doo. I took her to see The Who in Wembley with an orchestra. I took her to see The Stones in Hyde Park. And I've got these opportunities to pass it on to her. And I'm like, I would love to take her to a Rush show. And even though they were going to stop touring, I'm like, well, they could do a residency, or they could, you know, do something where they could still play together at some point. So at that moment, I knew that was over. And I was in a foreign country by myself, all alone. I was very upset that night, Jackson.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that it hit you that hard.
It did. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know, I think I felt the same way too. Cause when the headline comes up, you're like, you know, he wasn't arrested at some place for causing trouble. Like, this is bad. You know,
it's probably bad.
And,
yeah.
Exactly. And now that I'm thinking about it too, I think Jeff Beck also, because it was so, like with Charlie Watts, you knew something was off because he was, you know, he was out.
They replaced
for a while.
Him. Yeah.
And, right. And then the same thing with Neil too, when they had the, that Farewell to Kings movie, I was like, oh, something's off with this. But Jeff, he was here and gone. He was on tour. So
yeah, we just did a review of him and Johnny Depp in London, like a couple of months before he died, you know?
Oh man.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's not end on that. You know,
let's end on a high note.
Hey, Meatloaf was this extraordinary artist who captured hearts around the world. One of them was Miss Stephanie Myers, and she had the rare ability to see him live as a young woman, and it's changed her life. And look at her now. She's the host and co-host of two amazing podcasts and gets to share her stories with people who love rock and roll, but maybe didn't know a lot about Meatloaf. And we appreciate you coming on.
Appreciate you having me. It's been wonderful. Anytime, guys. Anytime.
Thank you.
Do you want to give a plug on where people can find more on Stephanie and Stephanie Ann song facts or anything you want to plug?
Sure. Folks can find Stephanie and Stephanie Talk Tunes at stephaniestalktunes.com. We're taking a short break after 3 years of doing every other week. So we will be back in March. So expect that. And then Song Facts podcast, you can find wherever you get podcasts. And for the stories behind the songs, you can go to songfacts.com. I just released episode. It's with Mike Stoller of the songwriters Lieber and Stoller.
It's amazing.
That's out this week. He was so cool. Writer of Jailhouse Rock and Trouble and Hound Dog and Is That All There Is and so much more. So he was 90 years old. I do suggest folks listen to that because it was a lot of fun.
Not a bad first show, Stephanie. That's
it was really fun.
That's amazing. Oh, good for you. Well, thank you so much. And we'll definitely want to have you back on again here soon. I mean, we got to have both of you on to do an album with us sometime. I mean, that might take 2.5 hours as much as we'll all want to talk about it. But still, it'd be fun.
I'd love that. Yeah, that'd be really fun.
Well, our thanks to Stephanie Myers of two great podcasts, Stephanie and Stephanie Talk Tunes and Song Facts. And what a good time that was, making a new friend and learning all about Meatloaf. You know, someone we're all kind of aware of, and it's either you're a big fan of him or not. But apparently, at least twice in history, people all over the world have freaked out for him, and he captured the mind and heart of a young Stephanie Myers in the 1990s, and from there, her life was never the same. Huge fan, but to see him 13 times. Wears a necklace with his guitar string in it. And isn't a weirdo. A functioning member of society, doing good things for the world, both on and off our podcast. And that was a lot of fun. A fun conversation, and I learned about Meatloaf. I'm sure Jackson did too. We hope you did too. So thanks to Stephanie Myers. Thanks to Pantheon Podcast, of which we are both proud members. And thanks to our sponsor, RareVinyl.com. Use code UGLY. Save yourself 10% off any purchase at RareVinyl.com. It'll be a month or so before you hear from us again on First Concert Memories. And we want to hear from you. Which bands changed your life when you saw them live for the first time? Which concerts got you into rock and roll and haven't let you out since? Email us. Let us know. It's uglyamericanwerewolf@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @ugly_werewolf or @actionjack72. We're also on Instagram. We're on Threads. We're on YouTube. So reach out to us. Let us know the concerts that changed your lives. And whatever you do out there, rock and rollers, keep going to live music. It's the best way to keep rock alive.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.